Hi, this is Dan Lynch, and I'm taking over the Floss Weekly host chair this time as Randall's away. I'll be joined by Jonathan Bennett as co-host, and we're going to be finding out more about hardware benchmarking from Michael Larabelle, who's the creator of openbenchmarking.org. He's going to tell us all about how to test hardware, how he tests the hardware, and how you can recreate those results across the world. So stay tuned to find out more this time on Floss Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Dan Lynch and Jonathan Bennett, episode 454, recorded Wednesday, October the 11th, 2017. openbenchmarking.org. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/floss. Hello and welcome to another edition of Floss Weekly. This is Floss Weekly 454, and the eagle-eyed amongst you will notice that I'm not Randall Schwartz. He hasn't moved to England, shaved his head, and maybe put on a bit of weight. He's actually away on another cruise. I heard Aaron talking about it last week about what goes on cruises and stuff. So I'm sure Randall can tell us when he gets back. But I am joined by for the first time we've actually spoken live by Jonathan Bennett, who's the co-host for today. Hey, Jonathan.
Hey, Dan, it's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good. It's good we finally got together. I mean, we mentioned it before. It's the third time I've said it now, but I'm going to keep saying it. This is the Linux fans kind of love-in fest for us today, because even our guest is a Linux user, which I'm sure we'll talk about. So that's going to be great. So I imagine somewhere in the Mediterranean, I can hear faint screams coming out of a cruise ship.
Anyway. Yeah. Yes, poor Randall. We'll have to rib him about this for years to come.
Yeah. All right. And so today we're going to be talking about hardware, or more specifically benchmarking hardware and testing it and all of the things that encompasses, I suppose. And we're going to be talking about openbenchmarking.org, and we're going to find out more about all of that. But have you had any chance to look into this, Jonathan?
Well, so I've actually been following Michael Larabelle, our guest, for probably years now, because he also runs Pharonix.com, which is, you know, one of the places I visit online every day for Linux news. And so I'm kind of biased in that I'm already a fan of his, but I'm looking forward very much to learning some of the background about how he got started and where his emphasis on benchmarking came from and some things like that.
Mm-hmm. So we didn't discuss this beforehand, but does that make me bad cop then? Because you're clearly good cop. So am I going to have to be the one who's going to come in with the hard questions?
if you want to play it that way, I suppose we can.
Okay. No, I would never do that, especially to a fellow Linux user as well. Excellent. All right. And so, yeah, we're going to be talking about benchmarking, open benchmarking with Michael, and he's going to tell us a lot more. Before we do that, I do need to tell you about our sponsor for today. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you in association with Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. The mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. It's dated, and it needed a client-focused technological revolution. And that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or just refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, it's convenient, and it's powerful. Based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options available to you and find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. To get started, you can go to rocketmortgage.com/floss. That's rocketmortgage.com/floss, which is our code. They are equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage for their support of Floss Weekly. All right, and so don't forget to check that out. That's rocketmortgage.com/floss is the all-important code. All right, and so we should go ahead and bring on our guest. Michael, how are you doing?
Good, how are you, Dan?
I'm not too bad, thank you. So where are we speaking to you from, by the way?
We're speaking from basically my basement. This is, you can call it either a server room, or it's basically where there's roughly 60 to 80 different systems that are used for benchmarking, whether it be graphics cards or other PC components, and then all of the testing work that goes in for Onyx.com.
Hmm. Excellent. I have to say, I'm incredibly jealous of all that stuff that's behind you. I've just got a few old guitar cases behind me, as you can see, and a bag that says toys on it, which unfortunately hasn't got toys in it. It's got washing in it. Anyway, but never mind. We were just marveling at how quiet your server room is there. My keyboard makes far too much noise and everyone complains, but you've got, what, 60 to 70 machines and not a peep.
There's a fair amount of noise, but it's mostly quiet right now. It's basically controlled via this software that I had written for the Phronix test suite called Foromatic. And so it basically handles scheduling of all the benchmarks if they are run either on a like per commit basis or like on a daily basis or whatever the other time is. When there's basically a benchmark that needs to be run, it'll send the wake on LAN signal to each computer to tell it to wake up. And so then from that point, it basically powers on when needed, and then we'll power off afterwards. So, yeah, it's not like they're all running simultaneously.
Excellent. And I imagine you must have a killer kind of UPS in there, so in case there's any power cuts or anything.
Right now, this is powered off 520-amp circuits and no battery backup at this point. It ends up working out pretty well here.
Hmm. Excellent. I was going to start telling you about the fact that I've got a UPS in here, even though I haven't got that many computers. But anyway, you probably don't need to know all that. So, the kind of opening question that Randall often likes to start with is an overhead kind of 50,000 foot view of the project. Now, there's a lot of stuff we want to talk about here. And so I suppose we should start off by asking what openbenchmarking.org is. And then I suppose we'll back up and get into all of the kind of, this is your life kind of questions, like how did you get into this and so on. I know Jonathan's keen to know about that. So can you tell us a kind of a snappy elevator pitch for what openbenchmarking.org is?
Yes. So openbenchmarking.org is a component of the Phronix test suite, basically like a cloud component. It's where anyone running our open source benchmarking software is able to basically upload their test results to collaborate with others, as well as serving as a remote repository or package management system for being able to download tests remotely for the Phronix test suite. So basically that tests are unbound from like a given Phronix test suite version, and for any individuals to upload their own test cases that are compatible with the Phronix test suite. So it's basically, well, I wouldn't call it a social network, but yeah, just sort of like a cloud component for all things benchmarking that are run via the Phronix test suite. There's over 1 million benchmark results, more than 26 million test profiles and test suites have been downloaded from there for the Phronix test suite for facilitating that benchmarking. And over 1,000 different combinations of tests and suites available.
That's amazing. And am I right in thinking that the Phronix test suite is like a distribution that you would install or you would run off a live CD or something?
The Phronix test suite is what I had developed. Back in 2004, I founded Phronix.com for Linux hardware reviews, and then since 2006, I've been developing the Phronix test suite in collaboration with various companies. It's a software package that's available on most Linux distributions or can be installed on the other Linux distributions from our GitHub repository, as well as BSDs, macOS, and others. There used to be a live CD for basically being able to boot up the live CD and run benchmarks straight away. I haven't updated that software in a few years just for lack of time. So right now it's basically a standalone open source benchmarking framework for taking care of automating all sorts of different tasks from like Apache benchmarks to game benchmarks to all sorts of different workloads.
Hey, Michael, I want to jump in and say, first off, I am not nearly as creepy as Dan makes me sound, wanting to know all about your past.
He's already got it on file.
So Phronix.com came first. Is that what you just said? What's the story behind that? How did you get started on reporting Linux news and hardware information?
So I started Phronix.com in June of 2004, being basically dissatisfied at the state of Linux hardware at that time, where USB mice would often give you problems under Linux, and installing the graphics drivers would often be much more painful than they are today, where you'd have to deal with a zorg.conf configuration file a lot more and all sorts of other headaches involved. So I started phronix.com to basically provide Linux hardware reviews for what works under Linux and what doesn't, and all sorts of information like that. And then, yeah, eventually got into Linux news and coverage of different kernel changes that benefit hardware and everything along those lines. And then, yeah, out of that, the Phronix test suite was born for basically formalizing all the test scripts that I had begun writing internally for being able to review this hardware and benchmark it, and formed into its own open source project.
So this has started like a lot of the other open source projects that we've covered. It's kind of a theme. You had your own itch that you wanted to scratch, and the website and everything else was born out of that. How successful has that been? Do you feel like you've done a pretty good job? Has your itch been scratched, as they say?
I would say so, and then it certainly got a lot easier over time as well, dealing with Linux hardware. Back when I started in 2004, it was mostly a matter of does it work or not, whereas these days it's how well does it perform relative to Windows and what features might be missing from a given hardware component for working under Linux with the current drivers. So our focus has shifted a bit in focusing on those different areas now that Linux hardware overall has improved with all the different advancements to the kernel and contributions from all the major companies. And so, yeah, that's certainly been nice in those regards for how things have improved.
So Phronix.com has kind of become a big deal. I just read that it's apparently one of the top 3,000 websites on the entire web. Do you have any insight on that, or what?
I think, yeah, there was a Netcraft number for that. That just based upon traffic rankings and everything else like that. Or for Alexa, it's, I think, one of the top 25,000. And, yeah, there's all sorts of different metrics out there.
Did you expect it to get this big?
I'm not sure. I just started it for basically, yeah, itching my own itch, and just grew from there and just always committed to improving it and trying to make it better.
So the Phronix test suite, what sorts of things can you test with it? Is it just CPU tests, or can it do more than that?
There's really no limitations on the Phronix test suite itself, since it's basically a framework and offering standard interfaces and how you can interact with bash scripts and expressing data in XML. So you're in effect able to wrap it around any software that can be run in an automated manner. So you can find everything in there from CPU tests to graphics tests to hard drive tests, network tests, basically anything in between. There's no real limitation. As long as it can be benchmarked well and can be automated, then I'll happily accept any new test profiles. And that's why it's become such a diverse portfolio of tests possible.
What's the most interesting thing you've done with Phronix test suite? Maybe some really unexpected data that it gave you that, made a real world difference. Is there any stories like that?
Over the years, we have uncovered a few kernel regressions and then other regressions in different upstream components like GCC over time. And that's what some of these systems do here in my basement, is basically like benchmark the latest Linux kernel Git every day or the latest GCC Git and different upstream components for basically tracking the performance and seeing if these particular test cases can uncover any regressions.
Go ahead.
Then I was going to say, aside from that, over the years, some other interesting tests have been like testing Windows subsystem for Linux and Windows 10 has actually been pretty surprising how well that performs, mm-hmm. aside from poor IO. If you're not running anything disk bound, using the Windows subsystem for Linux is surprisingly fast on the hardware I've tested thus far.
When you find one of these regressions, say the kernel suddenly does something in double the time that it used to, do you do anything with the bisecting? Do you try to figure out which commit it was that broke it? And how much of a pain is that?
The Phronix test suite has a modular architecture, so I've actually written like a Git bisecting module for that. So it is able to bisect many different regressions if you basically can show what a good result is and a good or a bad result from the Phronix test suite, and then basically set up an arbitrary script for hooking in how you're going to bisect, and then it's able to do that in some regards. It works pretty well for the little time I've spent in the module. And then in general, if I find a regression, it all depends upon how big of a regression it is and if it's been found anywhere else or any like similar issue might be active on the kernel mailing list or anything like that. just to know how much time I'm going to bother investing with it. Basically, if I'm going to be able to make an article out of it on phronix.com to compensate my time for all the testing and everything. Since from ads on there is obviously how I'm paid for doing that testing. And so, yeah, it just really all depends upon the case and what exactly the regression is.
So you work a lot with the kernel. You work with various drivers as well. Is that right? I think video card drivers is one of the big ones.
Oh, yeah, especially, yeah, most Phronix readers are most interested in our graphics card testing and the ever-improving state of the Linux GPU drivers, especially on the AMD side, now that their open-source drivers have gotten a lot more competitive in the past 2 years.
So a lot of your readers are kind of the Linux gamer types?
There's a good percentage of them that are Linux gamers or what you'd consider, like, desktop enthusiasts. But there's also a good number of workstation and like server customers reading that for our different server benchmarks or cloud benchmarks. So it's a pretty diverse collection considering that I have a very diverse span of news that I'll cover and write about on Phronix.
So something I was interested in, Michael, is how things have changed since you started. I mean, it's 2003, 2004, you started Phronix. And that was around the time that I started to seriously try and use Linux as my main desktop. And I've seen huge changes in that time. So has the kind of advancement of I know we talked before about the fabled year of the Linux desktop. Let's not get into that. But, clearly Linux is a hell of a lot more popular these days. People, you've got Steam, you've got other things. Jonathan was talking about graphics there. You've now got Steam available on Linux, been around for a while. How have things changed? Is there anything, has it got easier now to kind of get manufacturers interested in this kind of stuff? Because they may not have been before.
In regards to the hardware support, yeah, as I mentioned before, it's a lot better compared to 2004. So now you've gone from, does this modem or graphics card or anything work under Linux to how well does it work is the major change now. But more broadly on Linux, the desktop support's certainly improved a lot. There's certainly many more applications like Skype and other software available. In regards to dealing with manufacturers, it's still a bit of a mixed bag. I'd say going back like 4 years was more of a prime spot, or 3 years around the time of Steam, Valve's announcements regarding Steam and Steam machines. Whereas in the past 2 years, I've actually seen some marketing folks at different companies more let down by Linux, that Steam machines really never took off, or they don't see any really escalating Linux market share numbers too much, that they're a bit less interested than, say, 2014 to 2015. But still overall much better than the early 2000s.
Yeah, I mean, and a little source, a little whisper in my ear has just told me that that you broke the story about Steam on Linux like a year or so almost before it came out. So
Visited Valve's headquarters like I think that was 6 months before or 4 months before they actually officially announced it.
Mm-hmm. So how do you think it's gone, Steam on Linux? Because, I mean, I've got to confess, I'm not a massive gamer, so it may not be my area. Perhaps Jonathan's got more to put input on that. But it seems as though initially, as you say, the excitement was really huge about 3-4 years ago. Has that dimmed a little bit, or is it still, do you think there's still the excitement there?
From the gamer perspective, there's certainly many Linux gamers out there that continue to be passionate about gaming on Linux and the potential that it does hold. Whereas from like a company perspective, it seems sort of to be mixed from the different hardware vendors that I deal with, whether or not they still think there's potential for Linux on the desktop / gaming or what the future will hold. There's still certainly many games being ported to Linux. Ferl Interactive is still doing a great job, and Aspyr Media, in porting like major titles to Linux. But we're still not seeing like AAA day one Linux game ports and a whole portfolio of Linux games. Like these days, we're seeing a lot more indie and smaller studios pushing their games to Linux. And then from simply a market share perspective, right now we're about 0.6% or 1%, whatever you want to call it, for the Linux gaming market share as reported by Valve and similar metrics. So it's not too great, but at least companies are continuing to port games to Linux. So that's a good sign. And hopefully we'll see that at least continue.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, it'd be great to see that continue. I was thinking about the whole Steam machine, Steam Box initiative thing they were doing, where you could have a verified Steam set of hardware that Valve would kind of verify was a Steam verified Steam machine. I may be confusing this in my memory, but that was something they seemed to be trying to push to hardware manufacturers, that they had to verify. They didn't have to, but they could verify their Steam machines. Do you think that affected the hardware manufacturers' take up at all?
Well, yes, at the time, that's when hardware manufacturers were much more interested in the possibility for Linux and SteamOS, whereas I don't think there's been a new Steam machine hardware release in about 2 years or so. So that's really unfortunate, but we'll see in the future if Valve and their partners decide to introduce new models. I would hope they do. Valve has still been maintaining their Debian-based SteamOS. By maintaining, they've been updating packages, ensuring new graphics drivers, and basically bug fixes. But nothing too spectacular, and I haven't heard of anything major coming on the horizon for SteamOS, so you could argue it's in maintenance mode whilst others think it's abandoned, and so there really isn't any clear communication. Valve is still maintaining it, and they also are employing a handful of developers to work on the open source graphics drivers, which is a good sign. Now they're continuing to improve that, as well as some infrastructure work for improving the X.org server handling for VR headsets and some other virtual reality related work. But in terms of like major SteamOS or Steam machines facing end users in the immediate future, there really isn't anything on the horizon that I'm aware of.
Well, whenever we talk about Valve, we have to keep in mind that Valve runs on Valve time. And that's that's very different than how normal people think about time. I seem to remember that when Valve first was talking about Steam machines and going to Linux, one of the things that the man himself, Gabe, was talking about was the Windows 10 store and the potential for lock-in. Is that how related is that? Is that still an issue that you see that we're up against?
I haven't spoken with Gabe in probably a year or so, but after they made the announcements about Steam for Linux and everything, he did mention that Microsoft representatives did visit and talk with all of them at Valve and whatnot. From what I can see, Gabe, as well as different developers like Epic Games, has expressed concern over with the Windows 10 store and their universal Windows apps, or whatever exactly that term was, has been concerns. But still, Steam continues to be available for Windows 10, and there hasn't been any like mass exodus of like Windows 10 games or anything along those lines. So some of the fears may have been concerned invalid, but others, maybe as a effect of Steam coming to Linux, has made Microsoft be less aggressive about their push for the Windows 10 store.
Yeah, that it's interesting that, as open source guys, one of the things we've been saying for a long time is giving a company like Microsoft this vendor lock-in position is a bad thing, and there's something to be said for the openness and the freedom of the Linux desktop and such of that. It's interesting to see some other people in the industry like Gabe starting to see some of those the validity potentially of some of those arguments, and it's interesting too that it kind of holds Microsoft accountable in a way that this is the plan B. There, you're not the only guy in the room. I find it interesting that Gabe has been, and Steam and some of the other people have been part of that conversation.
It's certainly interesting, and it's understandable, especially too on the Apple side now with macOS and their App Store. But likewise, Valve continues to push Steam on Mac, as well as recently now there's the VR support, and Valve is supporting the Metal Graphics API with their game. So even though some people have said Mac's dead and all this lock, and it's still happening, and Steam's still moving forward on that platform as well.
Sure. So rather than continuing to talk about Valve and Microsoft, let's talk more about open source. The Phronix test suite, what license is it under, and why did you make that decision?
It's under the GNU GPL v3, and I basically wanted originally to either go for the GPL or MIT license, and then just after researching it more and talking with different stakeholders, the GPL was basically just the best fit, and that's how that went.
So you do a lot of testing and reporting on driver code. Do you actually do any work directly with the video card drivers?
Unfortunately, not for lack of time, and there's plenty of like other people working on this, whereas there's not enough testing going on right now within Mesa. In fact, that's like one of the areas where developers encourage more community involvement, is to have more people test their hardware and their drivers, especially with all the given combinations of graphics cards and distributions, and then sometimes issues with displays and monitors. So like, there's actually not enough people testing these graphics drivers right now, for example. Well, of course, there can always be more graphics driver developers helping out, but yeah, I'm mostly focused on testing for, and that's how it consumes all my time.
Sure. So I'm curious, in starting Phoronix, do you have any background in writing, or have you just been self-taught?
Basically self-taught. I was studying accounting and other stuff, and just decided to keep writing and get better over time.
And so what does Phoronix look like now? I mean, what's kind of the flavor of what you're trying to capture? I know you started it out looking at interoperability, how well does certain hardware work on Linux? And we've talked about kind of that problem is in some ways been taken care of. So what's the flavor of Phoronix these days?
Mostly looking at how well different hardware components are performing under Linux, such as with graphics card drivers, how they're performing between AMD and NVIDIA, and then as well how the Linux graphics drivers with the current Linux games are performing relative to Windows, using the Windows drivers, and then most of the Windows games being DirectX 11 or 12 based now, showing like overhead difference and things along those lines. Providing reference benchmarks of different server platforms and cloud computing, and basically performance tests of whatever else catches my interest, either new file system improvements to the kernel, GCC compiler improvements that are interesting for newer hardware, or pretty much anything that catches my eye when I'm reading all the different mailing lists or Git logs.
So you report on what the kernel devs are doing. Do you get any pushback or even just correspondence with some of these guys?
I correspond with some of them, and then there's pushback sometimes depending upon if like I'll misreport something or just anything along those lines. But overall, it goes pretty well.
And to circle back to something you said earlier, Phoronix.com is supported by ads. Is that the only way you make money with it?
Phoronix.com itself is primarily supported by pay per impression advertisements. But there's also the Phoronix Premium subscription program, where for as low as $20 per year or $100 for a lifetime, you can have access to the ad-free version of Phoronix, and where like multi-page articles are rendered on a single page, and just some of the other benefits like that. So that helps offray the cost for people that prefer blocking ads and things like that.
Well, I was nice enough to let you work that commercial in there, so I'll ask you a little bit of a harder question. One of the things that I hear, so, obviously a Linux guy, I'm on Reddit, and I'm on Phoronix and all of those places. One of the things I occasionally hear is that Phoronix.com has these fluff articles from time to time. And one that just came out today that was interesting to me, but I saw some people complaining about it, was the article about there may be some more Vulkan games coming out because of a couple of things that, Farrell said something, and then one of the devs said something else, and you put these two things together, and it's just a rumor, but it sounds like, well, maybe there's some more games on the horizon that are going to use Vulkan. And on Reddit, I saw some people going, man, this is the kind of stuff I hate about Phoronix. And of course, I don't hate it, but what do you think about that? What's your response to the idea that this is just a fluff article?
Well, first of all, everyone's able to keep their own take their own view and enjoy it as they wish. Certainly not every one of my articles is like 100% perfect, and I can never please 100% of the population. I can understand where some people think some articles might be fluff related, and some people don't see value in like linking. I've seen before on Reddit linking to Phoronix versus linking to a kernel mailing list, while some people appreciate the value of Phoronix that they can get all the interesting news from different mailing lists and get basically summarized on Phoronix, as opposed to subscribing to dozens of different mailing lists themselves, or to all the different Git RSS feeds, or all the different other sources where I collect all my news from. So some people would prefer getting just a link to the mailing list or what have you. But yeah, other people prefer the summary and as well for an explanation, since oftentimes with like a kernel mailing list post, it's going to be a very, very short explanation of what's being changed. And so most readers out there aren't going to understand, oh, hey, there's the new AMD GPU DC patches for Raven. What does that mean? So I summarize it, and then obviously I summarize it as well as I can for the amount of time and resources and my areas of expertise. So certainly not everything is going to be 100% perfect, and not everyone's going to be happy. So I do my best, basically, and for the diverse range of news that I cover. Like in regards to the Vulcan stuff, it's based upon what's public for some circumstantial evidence. It's highly likely, and I do have additional information that obviously I can't communicate directly into the articles at times for NDAs and other factors, or when I get information from sources that don't want it to be exposed directly and other things like that.
So we've got a question from the IRC channel for you, Michael. There's people chatting away there at the moment, and Rob W. has come up with a really good question. He says, can you describe how you approach the idea of performance testing? What metrics do you decide to focus on, FPS, etc., and how?
It all depends upon what exactly I'm looking to test. Like, did he comment if it's in regards to like graphics cards or my methodology for like any particular areas?
It doesn't say specifically graphics cards, but I imagine considering he said FPS, that might be. It might be something to do with graphics cards, but I think just generally, like your approach to your philosophy, I suppose, to this sort of thing.
Well, okay, yeah. So my philosophy with the Phoronix Test Suite is to basically automate and make everything as reproducible as possible, so anyone is able to reproduce the tests on their end and refacilitate them in their environment and see how they compare or what hardware differences or software differences there might be. In regards to the game testing, it's obviously limited upon what the game will provide. So for most games, when you're running their benchmark mode that the Phoronix Test Suite wraps around, they only expose the frames per second. So that's obviously what I go after. But then for games that do expose like the minimum FPS or maximum FPS, the Phoronix Test Suite will capture that. Or if they'll render frame time information or other standard metrics, that is collected as well. It's mostly a matter of what is provided. Since the Phoronix Test Suite itself isn't like making benchmarks or making games per se, but making use of industry standard workloads or games and everything along those lines, it's mostly a matter of whatever the industry standard is for that benchmark, like in terms of measurement.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm glad to see that Rob's replied that he did mean anything. So that was kind of good. I think I just hedged my bets there and kind of tried to not give an answer, really. But anyway, that's politician in me or something. I was curious about things like, I have to admit, my kind of, as I've mentioned, my gaming, PC gaming kind of days are a little bit behind me now, but just because I've moved on to other things. But I remember back kind of in the day, so I'm going to say like 10 years ago, it seemed to be that AMD had like awful support on Linux, and NVIDIA, although with binary drivers and stuff, was still quite far ahead. So do you have any thoughts on the kind of where that's gone? Are AMD coming back? What's going on with that, the kind of AMD NVIDIA battle, if you like?
AMD has certainly come a long way compared to 2004, back in the days of their FGLRX driver, and when it was basically a pain to install. The performance was very subpar to NVIDIA as well as to AMD's own Windows driver, and basically just a royal pain to deal with. But fortunately, over the past 5 years, as they've moved away from their legacy driver and onto their open source driver, where even now their closed source driver relies upon their open source kernel DRM driver. This new approach where they're just with a closed source driver relying upon that for basically workstation customers that need OpenGL compatibility profiles for like CAD applications and other things like that, and pushing as many users as possible to the open source driver. They've improved a heck of a lot. And then as well over the past like 2 years where Valve has been contributing improvements to the Radeon SI Gallium 3D driver, and there's been other companies as well contributing to the driver. These days, you can mostly get around the same performance under Windows and Linux with a current Radeon driver. In comparison to NVIDIA, it all depends upon the game. There's still many games out there on Linux that are more NVIDIA optimized, where they'll perform better under NVIDIA. And then it's also a matter of if you're comfortable with using the open source driver. Since while the open source driver is nice, you often need to pull down the latest Git kernel or Mesa, or make other changes like updating your microcode or binary firmware. So it's not as easy as just installing the NVIDIA binary driver, but if you want to use the latest AMD driver, it's possible, and it can generally perform well with most features. One issue has been with the latest Vega graphics cards, you can't get a working display support with the current mainline kernel, or with any recent Radeon card, you can't get HDMI or DisplayPort audio working. That's due to this big AMD GPU DC patch set that's been pending for several 2 years now. But that should be moved, merged into Linux 4.15. So at that point, AMD support will also get a lot better. But long story short, the AMD support has improved a heck of a lot compared to the early 2000s. And they're mostly on par with NVIDIA, with some exceptions.
And one of the big things that I always end up encountering, because I do have an NVIDIA, I have NVIDIA cards in most of my machines, to be honest, and I end up using the Nouveau driver quite a lot, which is the open source kind of, I suppose, recreation of the, it's not an official NVIDIA driver, but it is a working driver for those cards. So how does that stack up against the other alternatives? Probably not for gaming, I'm imagining.
Not for gaming, and if you're on basically a newer, like, GeForce GTX 900 or 1000 series, unfortunately, it's not too viable, as since with those two latest generations of graphics cards, they've moved to requiring signed firmware images for basically being able to initialize the hardware and allow 3D acceleration to happen. So Nuovo developers haven't been able to actually do anything without getting these signed firmware images from NVIDIA. And in some cases, they haven't got those firmware images for several months until after the graphics cards have been released. They've been able to offer just basically mode setting support, so you can light up your display, but you won't actually have any 2D or 3D acceleration. So the past two generations and moving forward is unfortunately rather restricted. And then when they've even been able to get this support working with the needed binary-only firmware code, they don't yet have reclocking working to be able to get the graphics card to boot to its desired performance frequencies, but basically the lower clock frequencies that are set by the video BIOS at boot time are much lower than what they're rated for, basically because they want to make sure the thermal's efficient and there's not going to be any other problems like that. So it's really not possible to game well on any recent NVIDIA card with a Nuovo. But if you're using a GeForce GTX 700 series or later, that's where they were able to work in basically the open source BIOS support. And so you can have a fully open driver, and they do have reclocking there, but it involves going to the command line and writing some values to sysfs. So it's not really user friendly. It's not like your graphics card's going to upclock itself or downclock itself depending upon the workload like you have with the other drivers. So yeah, there's a lot of issues with Nuovo, but it's been a very good effort considering just a handful of community developers basically are involved in creating it. So I certainly admire their work, and it's just unfortunate that these recent NVIDIA GPUs are more locked down and largely hampering their effort.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I want to jump in. We've got another question from the chat room. Our third co-host today, Rob W., wants to know, if you're trying to benchmark either a graphics card or some other subsystem, how do you decide what other hardware will fill out the test machine, and do you cross-benchmark with various CPUs, RAM, etc.?
It all depends upon like what exactly it is that I am benchmarking. Like if I'm comparing different graphics cards, obviously I'm going to pair it with like a higher end processor in order to make sure that the processor or memory or anything like that's not being the bottleneck as opposed to the graphics card. So when I'm doing that, yeah, I'll use a high end Core i7 or AMD Ryzen 7 processor just to make sure there's no bottleneck on that end. But then, yeah, routinely whenever there's a new processor launch, like last week with Intel Coffee Lake, I just finished up various gaming benchmarks with a Core i3, Core i5, Core i7 processor, then cross-compared to different AMD and NVIDIA graphics cards for showing how good of a processor you need to pair with whatever graphics card you're desiring to know what to expect. So yeah, basically do a little bit of everything. It just, yeah, all depends upon what makes the most sense.
I would imagine that the more variables you introduce into a test, the exponentially longer it takes to run it. Is that right?
Yeah, certainly. And then with the Phronix test suite, every test is run a minimum of 3 times. And then it, if the standard deviation from those results is too high, it'll dynamically increase that run count. So it basically, yeah, it takes a lot of time to do all the testing. But with the Phronix test suite, it's all basically fully automated. So I'm basically just there monitoring the screen to verify I don't see any imperfect rendering or no hangs or any other issues like that, and then to swap the graphics cards when test run is finished.
It seems like you've done a lot of work on the Phronix test suite to make your life easier so some of these things are automated. At what point will the Phronix test suite be able to automatically turn itself off and pull out one hardware piece of hardware and put the next one in? Is that coming?
Yeah, maybe if I got into 3D printing and stuff, I could probably pull something up, but don't need that quite yet.
Robot arm is what you need.
Yeah, there you go. So do you get hardware samples from manufacturers? Do you get support from AMD or NVIDIA or Intel? Do these guys send you stuff for free, or do you have to buy it out of your own pocket?
For basically all the major vendors, I generally get the hardware samples for free. And then obviously I'm still left with buying other peripheral hardware that's needed, since at Phronix we're not really reviewing system memory. Like, there's really not going to be any major difference with DDR4 memory between Windows and Linux. So things like system memory and power supplies and generally computer cases and most other stuff, I'll end up still having to purchase for facilitating whatever tests start to happen. Or in cases where I may get a new processor, but the motherboard vendors that I speak to aren't like too interested in Linux at a given time, or want to send more samples to the Windows websites, considering they get the more traffic. So it's all a juggling act, but yeah, in terms of processors and graphics cards, I get most of them as samples.
And I assume that you're pretty open and let people know that, hey, this was given to me for free. I can assume that there would be allegations of bias and such if you didn't let people know that. So that does get disclosed, I assume, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it gets disclosed in the reviews whenever. It's basically, it'll be mentioned AMD provided this review sample or what have you. And then, yeah, I know the FTC also wants you to disclose when you have basically a sample.
And do hardware companies ever ask for those samples back?
It all depends upon the hardware. Sometimes, yes, like with laptops, or they generally want the laptops back. But if it's processors or just other components, generally not. And then they also generally like, well, and I keep them anyhow because I benchmark them so often that given the ever-improving state of the Linux drivers, that especially with the graphics cards and Mesa, that I can basically do yearly comparisons going back like 10 years oftentimes with graphics cards for showing how the performance has improved with either the changing out the Linux driver or just showing on all across all the different graphics cards going back several generations. So compared to like the Windows review websites where the Linux or the Windows drivers always assumed to be good, the Linux drivers continue to improve and make up their differences. So it's always interesting to show how those improvements have been made, or comparing the performance per watt advantages and other system differences over the time.
So Keith512 wants to know, what is your power bill? How much power do you use on all of this?
I haven't looked lately. Generally, it's around like $600 a month for all the power.
Wow. That's quite a bit.
I wondered if maybe you were pedaling under the desk there and we just didn't notice. You were like, you're pedaling away under there. Like.
Has a million gerbils in the next room over.
Yeah. Eventually, I hope to get into solar power and everything. But yeah, the large upfront cost for that and everything along those lines is pretty high.
You could
right
get
now,
sponsored. So. You need to get sponsored by Elon Musk. Tesla to run
for
you.
Wonderful.
So we do have another question from the chat room. Our third host again, Rob W., says, have you ever gotten a test card and see a difference between it and a same model purchased off a shelf?
In regards to performance, no. With like graphics cards sometimes, but not in like the past 5 years, there's been issues mostly around the video BIOS. Yeah, sometimes they'll ship with a pre-production video BIOS, and that will behave differently from the production cards with basically the after modifications made by the different vendors. So I've had cases where like display unplugging or hot plugging hasn't worked quite right, or other issues like that, which the graphics driver developers have also faced, basically with like pre-production versus retail differences. or in just some odd cases where some vendors will factory overclock their graphics card or make other slight tweaks to their BIOS or other hardware components where it might behave a bit erratically under Linux. But yeah, I don't think I've had anything like that in the past few years.
So you've never had a situation where the preview sample runs a lot faster than the one you can buy off the shelf? I think that's what he's getting at.
I've never had any situation like that. And I think for what some people imply or assume on the Windows side, yeah, I believe they mostly do that. You know, different vendors have been accused of cheating on their Windows drivers or artificially limiting them if the AMD Radeon driver detects that it's not an AMD CPU present or what have you. The different allegations over the years about those things. But obviously with Linux drivers, when they're open source, you can see what the different vendors are doing, if they're doing any workarounds or cheats.
That's a very interesting advantage that, you know, we don't always think about when something is open source. You can't hide any of those dirty tricks in there. So we've talked a lot about gaming, which, you know, I know that's a big part of what Phoronix looks at. But that's not the only thing. Phoronix also looks at servers and workstation sort of environments, you know, non-gaming applications. What's some of your focus on that?
Well, speaking in regards to what I've been interested in relatively recently has been the AMD EPYC processors has been very interesting. Now, thanks to the Zen CPU cores, AMD is finally competitive again with Intel for their desktop processors and now server and workstation as well. So that's been really terrific to see, and it's the competitiveness has already resulted in Intel increasing their core counts and slashing some prices to become more competitive with these new AMD offerings. So I've been on the workstation or server side, doing a lot of AMD EPYC benchmarking right now, as well as Threadripper, and very happy with those results. Now having servers where there's 64 threads, 32 cores has been a lot of fun for seeing how fast I can build the Linux kernel and other components and tests like that.
So you kind of anticipated what I was going to ask. The Phoronix test suite, does it support tests other than gaming-focused tests? What sort of workstation or server-level tests do you have in there?
There's PostgreSQL benchmarking, Apache web server testing, all sorts of like fluid dynamics and other different workloads like that. What else? How long it takes to compile the Linux kernel or compile GCC or, basically hundreds of different ones from fluid dynamics and other like scientific or molecular biology workloads to just straight out kernel compilation and other tests.
And we've been talking about Intel and AMD. Do you ever do testing on ARM platforms?
Yes, I do, especially with the NVIDIA Jetson hardware with their Tegra socks. Those perform very nicely. Obviously, with benchmarking, I do run the occasional test on the Raspberry Pi, but it's simply not interesting unless you're wanting to compare performance per dollar or like performance per watt. So I'll review different ARM SBCs every once in a while. If they're like performance oriented or have some interesting specs otherwise. But I do some tests there, and then I've done some tests on MIPS and power. X86 is the main focus.
Well, so we've got another question. Virgil wants to know, have FreeSync monitors posed a challenge? What's the state of FreeSync?
FreeSync monitors, if you use the AMD GPU Pro hybrid driver with a recent graphics card, you can have working FreeSync support. You just need to use this hybrid driver and then enable the XR&R FreeSync property. But if using the fully open source driver stack, there isn't the support quite yet. The AMD GPU DC display code, this big patch that I've been talking about for Linux 4.15, that has basically the prerequisites needed for FreeSync, but it doesn't actually expose the new iOctl for allowing FreeSync to work with the next kernel. So with Linux 4.15 on the open source AMD driver, you won't have working FreeSync, but they're working towards supporting FreeSync on that open source driver or the VESA version of that known as Adaptive Sync. That should be there maybe for 4.16, but just the final patches haven't been posted yet because they're just trying to make sure the kernel to user space API is all sorted out and solid for the different driver vendors, rather than just open sourcing and upstreaming their existing FreeSync patch they use in AMD GPU Pro.
I think we'll have to rename this episode Michael Answers Your Linux Hardware Questions.
And then NVIDIA G-Sync is basically NVIDIA's equivalent with their monitors. That is supported as well, too, if you use the NVIDIA binary driver. They've been supporting that well, yeah, assuming you're fine with a closed-source driver.
So we've talked a lot about Phoronix and the Phoronix test suite. We haven't actually talked much about open benchmarking. So give us kind of a refresher, because it's been 30 minutes since we talked about it. We've all forgotten now. What is open benchmarking, and what's the purpose of it? What can we accomplish with open benchmarking?
It's basically the web component to the Phoronix test suite, for where anyone can upload their own test results or download basically other people's test results and compare them. So whenever I'm running any benchmarks for Phoronix.com via the Phoronix test suite, they end up getting uploaded to openbenchmarking.org. And besides rendering all the graphs and displaying everything nicely for the web, any other user in the world that goes to the openbenchmarking.org page and basically looks at the little unique identifier in the URL, they're then able to basically copy and paste that URL into the Phoronix test suite. And from there, the Phoronix test suite will basically fetch all the needed metadata and the test profiles from openbenchmarking.org, and then proceed to set up these same exact tests in the same exact manner that I had executed them in terms of how the test is configured, and then proceed to run all the benchmarks in the same manner, and then render all the results side by side. So it basically allows for like a lot of collaborative comparisons. If you want to see like how your processor or your hard drive compares to whatever benchmarks I did on Phoronix.com, it's made super trivial with openbenchmarking.org and the Phoronix test suite, as well as for allowing anyone at all to basically create their own account and begin uploading their own test profiles if they want to wrap the Phoronix test suite around whatever like college scientific workloads I've seen some users do, or other things like that.
So I want to dig a little bit more into the value of open benchmarking. So you mentioned the ability to run a test suite on a local computer and compare it to other results. Is it also useful for things like, let's say I want to build myself a new computer and I want to pick, my components. Can I go to open benchmarking and say, I want to see tests from this component and this component and this component, and then just compare those side by side to be able to look and say, all right, which one runs better under Linux, or maybe even under the distribution that I'm planning to run?
Yes, you are able to do that with openbenchmarking.org. There is the search functionality for searching for, say, Intel Core i7 or AMD Radeon, whatever. And then it will show you all the results available matching those criteria. I have been meaning to further improve the functionality to make it like more like a parts picker, or to basically better visualizations for helping users. So right now you are able to do that and the search works and everything. But yeah, hopefully I find the time in the next few months to further make the search better.
And is it just yourself working on the code side of this, Michael? Are you working out on your own, or do you take contributions for anyone?
I'm basically the lead developer of the Phoronix test suite. So yeah, that itself is like 120,000 lines of code right there. I'm basically maintaining it myself, but there are the occasional people that will contribute a patch for like improving the BSD support, or if on some new systemd release or what have you, that one of like the interactions with the Phoronix test suite gets a bit messed up, there are smaller patches. There aren't too many big patches that we get via GitHub. Occasionally there will be, but yeah, not too often. So it's mostly me maintaining the code. And then there are, yeah, some contributions of new test profiles to openbenchmarking.org for testing different workloads and different configurations.
And what language is it written in? Are we talking C, C++? I mean,
The Phoronix test suite is actually written at its core in just against the PHP command line interface binary, which was done originally because PHP is basically always ported to whatever platform for the LAMP stack. So PHP itself can basically run anywhere and widely supported across different operating systems and architectures. But then the Phoronix test suite test profiles are written in basically bash scripts to interact with whatever binary you want to use. And then the metadata is expressed in XML.
And if somebody wanted to get involved, if someone listening to this is thinking, I'd like to contribute something to the project, what would they need to do that? What kind of skills would they need, or what hardware or whatever would they need?
With using PHP for it, the barrier to entry is pretty low, since it's a pretty easy language to grasp and everything. So, at least in my opinion, the code's pretty straightforward as well. And so they basically just have to start checking it out. And then if they have any questions, to either comment on GitHub or in my forums or what have you. It's a pretty low barrier to entry. And so there's occasionally people that do contribute the smaller patches. And yeah.
Excellent. Do you support any kind of closed source testing for, like, you know, commercial games or maybe, you know, customers, clients, whatever, who maybe don't want to make their test results available publicly? Is that something that you would consider doing?
Yes, the Phoronix Test Suite can wrap around binary-only software like Steam or the spec industry tests and everything that aren't closed source. So there's really no issue with the Phoronix Test Suite basically just interfacing with them and not needing the source per se to make source-level modifications, unless, like, a test isn't like benchmark or automated friendly to begin with. In terms of like tests that can't be redistributed publicly, there is like some flags in the XML metadata that can be expressed to say, hey, this can be uploaded to openbenchmarking.org or made public otherwise. So it will basically flag those. There's really no license imposed on the test itself that can be open source or closed source.
Yeah, and I would think, I mean, from what you were saying, and it makes perfect sense logically, the key thing with this is the fact that you can reproduce the same tests really accurately, because obviously they're not going to be a lot of use. If I do one test and you do another one and they're not exactly the same, then our results, we can't be compared.
Right.
Yeah, so I imagine that would be a challenge of that kind of thing. Anyway, I was interested in you've mentioned a bit about the community and so on and how people can get involved. I mean, what kind of things are you looking at in the future? What would you like to bring into to openbenchmarking.org and maybe the Phoronix Test Suite as well? Is there anything that you're excited about that you want to kind of get in there?
I have been wanting to basically get back to reproducing the Phoronix Test Suite live DVDs USB environment, where you can basically just boot Phoronix Test Suite directly off a USB device and have not only the standardized benchmarking software, but a standardized operating system basically that's updated weekly or quarterly or what have you. So you can basically be sure all the software settings would be the same, so you would strictly be comparing the hardware differences. Whereas right now we're mostly benchmarking with Ubuntu or Fedora for the Phoronix articles. I've been wanting to get back into making this live CD just so it lowers the barrier even more for people that want to benchmark, as well as for other cases where people just want to boot to the environment to burn in their hardware. Like, there are some hardware vendors that just have basically an Ubuntu live CD right now, and then we'll boot into that and then run the Phoronix Test Suite for stress testing their systems either before shipping new systems to customers or when handling RMAs for returns to try to find out if there's defective memory or what the issue might be.
Excellent. And one question I wanted to ask when I was thinking about this interview this morning was about whether we talked about manufacturers and how, you know, you interact with them, obviously. Has a manufacturer ever complained to you about the results of a test and said, we're not happy with this and we want you to redo it or anything? Or has any of that ever come up?
Not really, because with the Phoronix Test Suite, it all being automated and open source, like, there really isn't instances where they're like, oh, the results are outright wrong. Like, they can end up reproducing it. Where there is some pushback is with the marketing folks or PR people at the different companies I deal with. They'll be like, oh, this doesn't make sense. Or why do you say this feature isn't supported? And I'm like, well, it is not supported under Linux, or this is actually what it is under Linux. Like, people that are more Windows inclined or Mac OS, and so they really have no marketing experience with Linux, they'll sometimes just reject the conclusions and say, well, that's incorrect, when in fact it is, but they just don't really focus on Linux. And so the PR people will prefer complaining or saying they're invalid or requesting things be done about it.
Is macOS a different challenge? Because it just occurred to me, because Apple are quite obviously restrictive with the hardware and what you can actually run, what hardware you can run macOS on and so on. So, does that make it more of a challenge to test with them or anything? Because I'm assuming you can't just take macOS and run it on. I know we've heard of Hackintoshes and all that kind of stuff, but you can't just take it and shove it onto any hardware. Does that create a challenge for you?
Right. So my macOS benchmarking is mostly curiosity for people if they want to know how a new macOS performs relative to the latest Ubuntu or latest Fedora or Debian, what have you. I'm not making any Hackintosh computers or anything along those lines. I'm often just comparing the macOS to Linux performance on the same hardware, which is Apple's hardware. Or I'll be doing other sorts of like file system testing on macOS. But in terms of fundamental benchmarking, there isn't really any issue. And going back to why I started the Phronix SOE in PHP originally is that, macOS even still ships with the PHP command line interface binary by default. So, the Phronix SOE runs fine there. Just a matter of hooking into some different APIs for querying hardware and software data and some other changes. But, there's no real issue, at least from my perspective, for Mac benchmarking.
Excellent. And it's been really fun to geek out over particularly Linux hardware support for me and possibly Jonathan as well. Other operating systems are available. Unfortunately, we're kind of running towards the end of our allotted time now. Is there anything that we haven't mentioned or brought up that you want to tell the listeners about? Because I know we can sometimes miss things when we get excited or whatever.
I don't believe so. I think, just the reader should know they can go to Phronix to find out the latest news or Linux hardware information. And then overall, in terms of Linux hardware, just to know that the state and performance continues to be improving. So if some gamer or whatever hasn't tried Linux in a few years, they should try it again so they can see the improvements that have taken place in the past few years. And the usability continues to improve and the Linux ecosystem for hardware continues to get better and better. So just making sure people know that.
Excellent. And I do have to ask Randall's favorite two questions, his final two questions that he always asks everyone, which is, what is your favorite scripting language?
My favorite scripting language? Well, I guess I would just say JavaScript because it's quite useful, or Lua, but
Not PHP, otherwise like Bash. Funnily enough. just curious.
I haven't thought about it.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. And his other one is also about text editors. What's your favorite text editor or editing environment?
I use Nano on the command line a lot, but I still use Vim sometimes if depending upon the distribution where if it's Nano's not by default, I'm like, okay, I'll just go to Vim. But then if I'm in a GUI environment, I'll generally prefer gedit.
Yeah, that makes sense. I used to use gedit a lot. They have loads of great extensions for adding in more kind of IDE-style functionality as well, which I like, which is very cool. Sadly, not Emacs, so Randall won't be satisfied, but, you can't win them all. Anyway, I'm just going to rip off my shirt and reveal a Vim T-shirt underneath. I would never do that. Anyway, it's been really good to talk to you, Michael. Thanks for all your continued work for Linux hardware support and testing it and all of that, because I know it's made a big difference to me, because I'm trying to buy hardware that I can run Linux on, and having good benchmarks and good information out there is really useful. So it's been really good to talk to you. Thanks for coming on.
Great, thanks for having me. It's been good to be on here.
Excellent. So that was Michael Larrabelle of the openbenchmarking.org project and Phronix and many other things. So what did you think, Jonathan?
I think Michael is an extremely busy guy. He's got a lot going on there. But I know it's been very useful for me to be able to have the breadth of reporting that he does and the benchmarking. There's been quite a few times that I've bought hardware based on his recommendations and benchmarking. So it's been invaluable. And it was very neat to get some of the backstory about why he started it and where he's going.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it is really, we mentioned that it's one of the top kind of 3,000 sites on the web, according to Netcraft and so on. And it really is very, it's a lot of people's first stop when they want to know about hardware and stuff. And that's really impressive considering, obviously like most of the projects we talk about and the people we interview, he started it as a kind of a scratch your own itch thing. And now it's kind of scratching everyone's itch, if that's not a weird thing to say.
That's how it works.
Excellent. All right. And so I should tell you quickly about other things that we've got coming up. You can find us at twit.tv/floss. That'll take you to our page on the Twit website. Please do get in touch with us. You can find us on Twitter. Our handle is @FlossWeekly, so it's nice and easy. There's a Google Plus account and page as well that I believe Randall's started to use again recently. So you can also, if you go to Google, I'm not going to attempt to read the kind of massive long URLs that you get from Google Plus. So if you go to Google Plus and type in your search box, Floss Weekly, you will find us. And you can join us via IRC. We had people asking questions today, obviously, as we noticed, via the chat as we went along. And the show records every Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 9:30 a.m. Pacific, or 4:30 in the afternoon UTC. And at the moment, if you're in the UK like me, we're on British summertime, which is actually an hour ahead of UTC. Although you wouldn't know it was summertime here. You rarely can tell what season it is. So, come and join us in the IRC channel. You just need to head to twit.tv, and there's instructions on there on how you can do what people have done today, give us questions and stuff and get involved. And we always love to see people do that. Upcoming shows for the rest of the month. We've got October the 18th. We're going to be joined by Matt Ellis, who's going to tell us about Flogo, flogo.io. Which is not easy to say, I have to admit. So I've got to admit, I'm not a massive expert on Flogo. Have you heard of Flogo, Jonathan, at all?
I've not. It's a new one to me as well.
Okay, so I'm putting you on the spot there. That was my deflection tactic. So I'm not the only person who doesn't know about it. But that's what the show's here for. We'll find out about it. That's the thing. Next, October the 25th, we've got David Barrett, who's coming to tell us about Bedrock. Which is a database, I believe, Bedrock DB. I have to confess, I was really hoping when I saw that we had a project called Bedrock on it would be something to do with the Flintstones, but he's probably fed up of hearing about that. we were going to try and get Fred Flintstone, but we yabba-dabba didn't. Anyway, never mind. Enough of my cheesy jokes. So yeah, it's a database, distributed database. So we're going to find out more about that. We've got, after that, the 1st of November, we're going to have Fred Simon, who's going to tell us about JFrog Artifactory. JFrog Artifactory, which I'm assuming is a Java thing, just from the J. I may be completely wrong. I hope I'm not doing them a disservice there. Anyway, so we'll find out more about that. As you can tell, I'm frantically filling because I don't really know enough about these projects, but I will be tuning in to find out, and so should you. So if you go to twit.tv/floss, there's a link in the sidebar which takes you to a spreadsheet, a Google spreadsheet, where you can see basically all the projects we've got on our list of upcoming guests. And if you have a look at that and you decide that, or you know of an open source project that you would like to hear about, but it's not on the list, it's not, it's not slated to come up, by all means, you can try and help us out by contacting the project's developers or the head of the project and having them email Randall. His address is merlin@stonehenge.com, and you can find that on the website as well at twit.tv/floss, and have them contact us, and that's the easiest way to get them to the top of the list so we can get them on and talk to them, and we really do appreciate your suggestions and so on. And with that, I think I've reached the end of my show notes. So, I wanted to say thanks, Jonathan, for joining me. It's been great to talk to you.
Yes, it's been especially fun. I've been here 3 weeks in a row now. If this keeps up, I will stage a hostile takeover of Randall's job next, I think. But
do you ever go home, or do you just stay here all the time? Are you just like, they switch the light off and then they switch the light on when it's showtime?
Well, the advantage is that I'm working out of my home office, so I get to do the show from home, which is kind of nice.
That is useful, yeah. And I heard you joking with Aaron last week about the fact that you have been on 3 weeks in a row, but I'm going to pitch the fact that probably makes you our MVP at the moment, because you're really covering everything. So you're definitely our MVP at the moment. You're like the glue holding the show together. We really appreciate that.
Well, it's useful to be self-employed and to be able to have flexible hours like I do. So when I find an opportunity like this, I can be really flexible to step in. And I think Floss Weekly is an important thing in part of the Linux ecosystem, the open source ecosystem. So I consider it important to make sure that the show goes on. The show must go on. So Yeah, that's why I'm willing to jump in all the time.
Excellent. Is there anything you want to plug or anything you want to tell us about? Where can people find out more about what you're up to?
There is mainly my Twitter, which is down here at the bottom of the screen, some over here. Yeah, over here at the bottom of the screen, JP_Bennett. Occasionally tweet things out to there, and that's probably the best place to keep up with me.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Jonathan. Always great to speak to you. I should wrap up as well, because I think we're very much out of time. So if you want to find anything about what I'm up to, you can head to danlynch.org, which is my website. And I did promise Randall last time I was going to update the blog on there, and I haven't. So I'm going to promise again that I'm going to update the blog and hopefully not break my promise this time. Or you can find me on Twitter, which is @MethodDan. Until next time, I think Randall's back next time, but we'll find out in a week's time. So thank you for listening to Floss Weekly, and we'll catch you next time for more free Libre open source software.